You see, the church exists inside of two different sociological constructs at the time. While it is not of the world, it is in the world. And the fact that it is in the world means it is affected by the world. We cannot claim autonomy in the church to the degree that we completely ignore what's going on in the world, because what's going on in the world affects the church. It's not just that the church affects the world also affects the church. Such were the times from the earliest of stages, and even till now, it is arguable which one affects the other the most, because we are affected by the environment in which we are planted, just like a seed is affected by the soil it is placed in. And the seed affects the soil in like manner. The church is in the world and yet not of the world, and yet it is affected by the world, and yet it has an effect on the world. Did you get that? All right, stay with me, because I'm going down into the deep of the water, and I want you to be able to go with me. We are seeing the church at a time that it is born out of the scars and the scrapes and the oppression of a suppressed people called Jews, who are being suppressed in their own land. They have not traveled by boats into a far country to be suppressed and to be oppressed. They are being oppressed in their own house. Can you imagine somebody taking you captive in your own house? Rome has come into Israel's house and taken them captive in their own community and subjugated them and caused them to submit to the sovereign powers of a political system that is enforced and imposed on a Jewish community. And out of that Jewish community, the church is a sect of that community. So you have Rome, the sovereign power, dominating the Jewish community or Israel as if they were trying to set up an offshoot of their Roman Empire. And then inside of that offshoot, which is Israel, is a religious sect called the church. And Peter is ministering to the church, hoping to affect the nation and ultimately the world. But he is fighting at a complete disadvantage. He is not fighting as if he were the emperor of the Roman Empire with all the support of power and influence. No, he is a subcategory of a sect of people that are basically ignored not only by the Romans, but by the Jews. That's why the text is careful to talk about him overcoming not only the oppression that Herod had placed on him, but the expectation of the Jews. In other words, he was ministering to a people who were not interested in his message. Have you ever tried to help somebody who didn't want your help? And there you were fighting off their enemies, and they didn't even appreciate you for what you had to bring. I wish I had a witness, somebody. Have you ever tried to save somebody and the person you was trying to save was trying to kill you, and you were trying to fight off devils you didn't even have to fight? That is the situation for Peter. He has attracted the hatred and the acrimonious disposition of Herod only because he seeks to serve the Jews, of which Herod is not even a part. But Herod is interested in the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire is interested in dominating the Jews. And so what goes on with the Jews concerns the Romans, and they have no tolerance for the Jews one way or the other. And now this little group is causing an upheaval, and it has gotten all the way to the ears of Caesar, for which Herod is a subordinate. And Herod is trying to prove to Caesar that I can handle this problem, so that he will get out of this dismal post over in Israel and go back and get a better assignment in Rome, where his family and his life and the power and the seat of their government exist. It is in that environment that we step into this text. You must understand the periphery or you won't appreciate the predicament. Herod has arrested Peter. This is not a bunch of Jewish priests that have taken him into captivity. This is the sovereign power. This is a government attack. And the powers that be have arrested Peter and taken him hostage and assigned 16 soldiers to one man for an overnight stay. You know you're important by the level of the attack that is leveled against you. The enemy wouldn't be assigning so many demons to you if you weren't significant in the kingdom of God. 16 Roman soldiers is a lot to have surrounding one individual. I don't know that they used 16 soldiers to arrest Jesus. And yet Peter finds himself so significant that he is attacked and guarded by 16 soldiers. Perhaps it is because Peter has a reputation as a disciple. Peter is an outspoken disciple. Peter is a radical disciple. Peter is the kind of disciple that will stand up on the boat in the middle of a storm and say, "Hey, Jesus, if that's you, bid me to come." Peter was not a passive, lackadaisical, Johnny-come-lately sort of disciple. If Peter was on the boat, he was going to make some noise. If something was going on the boat, Peter was going to make some noise. Even if he had to jump off the boat naked and swim to Jesus on the pier, Peter was radical. I'm talking about water-walking Peter. I'm talking about the Peter who reached to his side and pulled his sword and cut off the ear, not of a Jew, but of a Roman soldier. Peter was bad. He didn't take any stuff. He was radical. He would set it off. That's what he used to do. That's what he used to do. That's what he used to do. That's how he used to work it. He had a reputation. They assigned 16 soldiers to control him because Peter was bad. His reputation was bad. But his reputation, I must confess, is seen in the light of the fact that he has always functioned in the midst of his comrades. Every time we see Peter cutting off ears or walking on waters, he's surrounded by other believers. But not now. Not anymore. He is no longer surrounded by the crowds because you draw a certain amount of energy from the crowd. The crowd is gone. It is dissipated. In fact, the crowd has gone and shut up in a woman's house named Mary, and they are praying for him because they figure, like Simon, Peter's probably next to be beheaded in the morning. And it is the night before the trial, and Peter is alone. You know, you can be mighty at doing what you do, but you still got to deal with your devils when you're alone. In the crowd, in the right environment, you're tough and you're strong and you're rambunctious. But when you go home and you take off your makeup and you get out your clothes and put your hair on the stand, you come down to the real you. Real faith always strips you of all of the mechanisms that make you seem mighty and bring you down to your lowest common denominator. And the enemy wants to know, how you like me now? Who are you now? It's not who you are on the stage. It's not who you are when you're doing what you do like you do when you do it. The real test and agony of life is how many ears do you cut when you are alone? And how much water do you walk on when you are lonely? And how much power do you have when you are by yourself? When there's nobody egging you on and there's nobody believing you and there's nobody to bear witness to who you are, how do you handle alone?